chicken prices in China have fallen to their lowest level in a decade as the virus worsens. With up to 79 people dead from bird flu in the past month alone, fears are rising that China could be facing the most dangerous season on record. State media has issued a warning online telling people to avoid live poultry markets. And according to one virus expert who spoke to Reuters, there's been a slower than usual response to the outbreak from the markets themselves.
Andrew Puzder withdrew today as the nominee for Secretary of Labor, 2 days after National Security Advisor Michael Flynn resigned under fire.
I spoke to one of the senators, Jeff Flake, and he said the main problem was Puzder's revelation that he had hired an undocumented worker and had failed to pay back taxes until he was nominated. Flake told me, Judy, for a labor secretary, you just can't ignore that.
BB and I have known each other a long time. As far as settlements, I'd like to see you hold back on settlements for a little bit. We'll work something out, but I would like to see a deal be made. I think a deal will be made. It might be a bigger and better deal than people in this room even understand. That's a possibility.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's February 16th, 2017, 5:11 in the morning. Glad to have you along for another edition of The Opening Bell, another business day. Lots to cover today. A little bit later on in the program, we'll be talking a little bit more about the new Commerce Secretary, what we might expect out of the new Commerce Department. In a little bit, we'll have our Associated Bank thought leader conversation. But first, let's check some of the news since you went to bed last night. Of course, the big news you heard there in the montage opening up, President Trump's nominee for Labor Secretary abruptly withdrawing his nomination after Senate Republicans balked at supporting him. Andrew Puzder, the fast food executive, said in a statement that he was honored to have been considered by President Trump, but that he was pulling out, saw the writing on the wall, lost a lot of Republican support, not enough to get through the confirmation process because of problems with an undocumented worker. Also, there was a concern about whether or not there were some abuse allegations involving his wife. Oprah Winfrey might have been getting involved, too, said she had an interview with the wife about that. So Andrew Puzder is out this morning on the market desk, the WGN Associated Bank market desk. Dow futures are pointing toward a negative open now, off about 22 points. The NASDAQ futures are flat. The S&P futures are lower. European markets are generally lower this morning. World markets as a whole hit all-time highs today as the latest round of robust global data matched hopes that major economies like the U.S. will soon be serving up large helpings of fiscal stimulus. The dollar hit the brakes on Thursday, too, today as a glow of the previous day's upbeat data faded. U.S. government bond yields are easing back as well. Upcoming elections in the Netherlands, France, Germany, and possibly Italy have kept investors interested in safe government bonds, particularly in anti-euro and anti-EU sentiment on the increase throughout that continent. France coming up, Germany coming up, possibly the Frexit, as it's been called, the France exit from the European Union, Germany in there as well. It is the topic this morning as we conduct our thought leader conversation with Chuck Garcia, who's the Director of Commercial Deposits and Treasury Management at Associated Bank. He's with us this morning. Chuck, good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell. As we sit here this morning, we're talking about the possibility of seeing another country leave the European Union. Frexit, it's been called. Also Germany in there as well, possibly down the road. How is this impacting global banking?
Well, you know, I think in terms of the banking side, I don't know that it will immediately change. I think what it could change is how currencies are handled and so on and so forth. But I think the globalization of companies, especially large companies, I think it's here to stay. I think it could certainly change how money movement occurs and certainly has foreign exchange implications to companies. But I think the globalization of finances as a whole is here to stay. I don't see that changing. I think how you maybe handle the manipulation of money and the movement certainly could change.
And as this landscape changes, there's a couple of different things that might get affected here. One is how you as a bank invest money globally. That would be one of them, right?
Sure, absolutely.
And then the other would be clients who are coming to you who need expertise in this landscape.
Absolutely.
Talk about both of those.
Well, so we absolutely have the ability to move money internationally. I think our bank has a solid base, as do many others, of expertise in terms of, is it better to send U.S. dollars or the local currency? And so being able to guide clients as to what is better for their individual transaction or their business as a whole is significant and can mean significant amounts of money to the sending institution or the receiving institution. So wise clients will seek guidance on that front because the dollar differences can be considerable.
As we hear about this nationalist sort of effort by the Trump administration, the idea that you can rein in globalism, which all of these companies participate in, seems a little far-fetched.
It does to me as well. Again, companies and their supply channels, whom they sell to, buy to, those are very, very entrenched. And so changing that in a material way, I think that's going to take some time if it happens at all.
And there's a lot of money that possibly could be lost in that area.
No doubt about it.
So what are the pitfalls when clients come to the Associated Bank? What are the pitfalls that you sort of help guide them around?
Again, it really is what are their objectives? Okay, what are they trying to achieve? Are they a sender of money internationally? Are they a receiver? And those can really vary depending on whom they're transacting business with, what they're trying to achieve. Again, are they sending money, receiving money? And being able to provide them with guidance on that and how the money is moved can have considerable cost implications to them.
Chuck Garcia, Director of Commercial Deposits and Treasury Management at Associated Bank, in our thought leader conversation this morning.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, the Standard & Poor's 500 is on the longest winning streak in 3.5 years, closing nearly 12 points higher yesterday at 2349. The Dow surged 107 points to a record of its own, 20,611. The NASDAQ composite was down 37 points. The Labor Department says consumer prices rose 0.6% last month, the fastest pace in nearly 4 years. A jump in gasoline prices accounted for nearly half of January's increase. The president's choice to be Labor Secretary, Andrew Puzder, has withdrawn his name from consideration after Senate Republicans hesitated to back him. Puzder and his wife admitted to employing a housekeeper not authorized to work in the United States. And Starbucks is testing a menu of ice cream offerings at 100 stores in California. The Italian treat called affogato is a scoop of ice cream drowned in espresso. It quickly became a customer favorite during testing at the coffee giant's upscale Seattle location. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program at 522 at the beginning of the year here. It's a good time to maybe review cash flow management, not only at home, but in your business. We thought we'd share some tips in this area. We're on with Chuck Garcia this morning, the Director of Commercial Deposits and Treasury Management at Associated Bank. It's our thought leader conversation. Chuck, what advice would you have in this area when you talk to clients about cash flow management?
Knowing your trading partners. Okay, who do you pay? Who mm-hmm. do you receive money from? Obviously, having a confidence of on the payment side that you're going to get paid in a timely fashion. Most commercial companies, especially in a healthy economic environment, can predict very tightly how they're going to receive money coming in. Then you have the outflow. Obviously, you want to slow that to the best of your ability and or take advantage of any trade terms that could be in your benefit. When we've been in such a low rate environment, it's been less important. It's always important, but it's been less important. But now that rates are rising, especially if you're a net borrower, that cost of money today is higher than it was a year ago. So ensuring that you have efficient means within your company to move money out and have the efficiencies coming in is really important.
Invoicing and also payments.
Yes.
Those are two big areas. How do you advise clients in those areas?
I think it depends on the client and what they're doing on both sides. The efficiencies that can be gained both from a pricing within your bank for electronic transactions, so using the ACH, the automated clearinghouse system, very efficient, very predictable, and the dollar cost versus handling a check and or a wire transfer are considerably different.
And that advice is good for regardless of the size of your business.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
As we look at some of the other good steps, too, how to know what is a good pattern and a bad pattern in cash flow?
Again, you know, most companies have a pretty predictable trend, and smart companies, especially companies that have professional management, a treasurer, a cash manager, such can pretty well predict over the month what the flows in and out. Obviously, you know when you're going to pay people, so that's very predictable, especially employees. That's very predictable. So you know the outflows probably better than the inflows. But over time, you get to know your trading partners, and managing that and managing your investments according with that, or borrowing if you need to hit the low periods. Companies are pretty adept at that.
And they can know immediately when there might be a blip in there or a problem.
There can. We can send alerts. You know, most banks have alerts of thresholds, money coming in, especially wire transfers. So immediacy of information has become much more prevalent.
And is that information enough to actually build a forecast from month to month?
Absolutely.
And how would that look?
Well, again, so you start at the beginning of the month, you have a dollar, okay, and you know on the 15th I have to have payroll. So you know that's a dip down. In between there, you should have a good sense of what monies are coming in, what your cash position should be, also what trading type of payments you're going to have going out. So most companies, again, will build that flow based on kind of a monthly trend of what they know and what they perceive to be incoming funds as well. And again, if you hit the 13th and you know you need to borrow to cover payroll, you borrow, and then you pay that down accordingly.
The next one has to do with making sure you have money coming in, and that is steer clear of these long payment terms. I think, what is it, mostly 30 to 90 days?
Yes, or anything even shorter.
Anything more than that is bad?
I would say it's bad. You enter an element of risk with your client into that equation of something happens in that period of time, you can be left holding a considerable bag. One thing I didn't mention that's become much, much more prevalent, especially on kind of lower to mid-dollar transactions, is the use of cards for both a payment to your trading partners, but also accepting card payments for, you know, say medium-sized type of transactions. Again, the certainty of payment, there's a cost of the transaction on the interchange, but the certainty of payment is considerably favorable to companies.
And you know it instantly. There's probably less paperwork, everything, right?
Yes.
This next one seems like a no-brainer. Make managing your cash flow a priority. That seems like something people would do anyway.
Well, you know, it certainly is you would say a no-brainer. However, if you're a sole proprietor and you're out trying to sell your company or you're performing duties in the course of a day, your cash flow is not top of mind. It's getting your business going. It's handling your customer request. Many of those type of clients, they do their banking at nighttime, you know, or the weekend. And so they may be caught in a pinch at certain points in time. And so, again, I go back to some of the electronic alerts that you could get on your phone, your iPad, whatever. Those are really, really favorable for smaller companies. You go up the food chain and they will have professional management. It is a priority. That's their job. They wake up every day knowing that 7 o'clock, I'm pulling these balances. I know what my position is. And so there's a whole different level of management on an intraday basis.
Aside from invoicing, there are credit policies, there are payment policies. Those seems like things that bigger companies would have and people would adhere to. Seem like it might be harder for smaller businesses.
It is. I think there's an intuition that really will come into play of, hey, I know you. I'm willing to do business with you. Obviously, there are credit checks they can do quickly with D&B and things like that. But again, if you have a pretty small, lean running firm, you don't have people sitting around going, hey, I need to pull some D&Bs on this. So it can be a risk for small companies.
But also a benefit, too, because if you're one of the small companies that says to one of their clients, I know you, let's give you a little bit more time. That's the beauty of dealing with a mom and pop business.
It is. I agree.
So what else do you see out there on the as we look to the Trump administration again? I don't want to get into a lot of different policy things, but are you still optimistic? Because last time we talked to you, you were optimistic about the year.
Well, I think we can, you know, go minute by minute at certain points in time. But in a general sense, yes, I am. I think that there's an optimism in terms of the relaxation of regulation that I think is going to be favorable for companies. I think it's going to be favorable for banks. The hope is that banks will redeploy that cash. I look to some of the community banks, the investment they had to make around compliance that they couldn't then put to work for their local communities. I think that has very, very favorable conditions.
Chuck, always good to talk with you. Next time we see you, there'll probably be flowers coming up.
Terrific.
Have a good rest of the winter.
Okay, enjoyed it. Thank you.
Chuck Garcia is the Director of Commercial Deposits and Treasury Management at Associated Bank. You can hear our thought leader conversations every Thursday here on The Opening Bell, and you can follow Associated Bank at Associated Biz on Twitter and listen to our past conversations at WGNRadio.com.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:39. Glad to have you along for a Thursday edition of The Opening Bell. Earlier this week, Steven Mnuchin was sworn in to be the new Commerce Secretary. He is a former Wall Street executive and banker, and we thought we would take a little time this morning, have a conversation about him and what he might bring to the job. And we're happy to have with us this morning Chris Isidore. He's with CNN Money and has been reporting on this. Chris, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning.
To start off here, what would you say is, in a nutshell, people need to know about Steve Mnuchin?
He definitely has a much more varied resume than the typical Treasury Secretary. I mean, Treasury Secretaries often come out of strictly out of Wall Street, and he certainly has ties in Wall Street. His father was a Goldman Sachs partner. He was a Goldman Sachs partner, but he's also run a regional bank in California. He's been a movie producer. He's run a hedge fund. So he has a very varied resume compared to the typical Treasury Secretary.
So as we look at his resume here and see his background very big on Wall Street, how will that play as somebody who, as part of his job, has to regulate the banks and Wall Street? Is he up for that job?
Well, I mean, he's made it, and Trump has made it pretty clear that they want to reduce regulation. There's a lot about Dodd-Frank, which was the bill passed in the wake of the financial crisis in 2008-09, to try to impose more regulation on Wall Street firms and make sure that they didn't have another meltdown and bailout. And they've made pretty clear that they want to get rid of many elements of that Wall Street's not fond of. That's one of the reasons for the stock rally since Trump's been elected. A lot, you know, that rally's been led greatly by bank stocks and greatly by investors thinking that the banks will have a much freer hand. That being said, he's talked about wanting to have a 21st century version of Glass-Steagall. Glass-Steagall was the Depression-era law that was scrapped during the Clinton administration that separated investment banking and kind of commercial Main Street banking from each other. So I don't think Trump's going to break up the banks necessarily, but if there are more limits on what commercial banks can do, that will be interesting to watch. So, he certainly no more of a, you know, Wall Street creature than Henry Paulson was, who was the Treasury Secretary during the financial crisis, and a number of other Wall Street folks who have run Treasury.
When you've been writing about his history with the subprime mortgage lender IndyMac, one of the financial crisis's high-profile bank failures, how much should we pay attention to that now that he's in this new position and his background and history there?
Well, I mean, he did not run IndyMac. He bought the smoldering remains of IndyMac from the FDIC after the agency had taken over the bank. But there have been a lot of questions about the way he ran the bank that followed, which is called One West, especially its foreclosure policies, both its foreclosures of traditional mortgages, a lot of the subprime mortgages that IndyMac had written before it collapsed, and also what's known as reverse mortgages, which are mortgages sold to elderly customers, which are supposed to be allow them to stay in their homes as long as they want without having to make payments. And yet One West's reverse mortgage arm was very active, the most active in foreclosing on widows and elderly. That got a lot of attention during the confirmation hearings. He defended himself, insisted that the foreclosures were due to government policies. It's probably not the type of thing that's going to, the Treasury Department's not going to start foreclosing on people now, so it's probably not all that important for what he does going forward. I mean, the things he has to do going forward are the things that any Treasury Secretary would have to do. He's got to deal with the very first thing he's got to deal with is the debt ceiling, which we're going to hit, the government's going to hit next month, and he's going to have to find a way to keep paying the government bills and to work with Congress, pretty fractured Congress, to get approval to raise the debt ceiling, or else the U.S. would default on its debt for the first time. That would normally be unthinkable, but a lot of things that seem unthinkable seem to be happening now. So right. That'll be interesting to see how he handles that. He said that he wants to do that sooner than later, and that's a first priority, and it's got to be his first priority.
Chuck, he's not the first Wall Street guy to be in one of these positions. There's a lot of these guys on the Trump cabinet. Are people focusing too much on that? I mean, because there always has been, to some extent, these folks who've had this experience in the government service.
Sure. I mean, Trump's cabinet has fewer kind of career government public servants than most, because, I mean, starting at the top, obviously, we've never had a president who's had no government service, either elected or military office, before becoming president. And he's got a lot of people in a number of these posts who come completely from outside of government, more than, you know, Obama had, more than Bush, either Bush, more than Clinton. There is a certain institutional memory that comes from having people who are veteran public servants that this administration doesn't have. Now, whether that's a good or bad thing depends on your political point of view and how these people perform. But Mnuchin is, the two Obama Treasury Secretaries both had extensive government experience as the head of the New York Fed and as the budget director for the president before they became Treasury Secretary. Mnuchin has no government experience whatsoever.
Chris Isidore is with CNN Money. Good of you to be with us this morning, Chris, on the opening bell. Glad to have you.
Thanks very much.
It's 5:46. You can check out Chris's stories on CNN Money at money.cnn.com and follow them on Twitter at CNN Money.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program at 5:50. Dow futures on the Associated Bank Market Desk pointing lower, off 31 now. S&P and NASDAQ futures are lower as well. We're watching crude oil this morning trading up about 0.5% at $53.41 a barrel. Gold is up. Silver is up as well. Let's get the latest now on commodities and agriculture. And here is Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. A tough day in live cattle and hog futures trade yesterday. Profit-taking came into the market, prompted by softer wholesale beef values and the uncertainty about cash cattle prices this week. February live cattle futures ended the day down 60 cents a hundredweight. And the choice wholesale beef price yesterday declined 43 cents per hundredweight from Tuesday's price. Technical selling, profit taking also hit the hog market yesterday. The April contract ended the day down 52 cents at $70.77. Meanwhile, in the grain market, soybean futures rallied. Corn hit a 7-month high yesterday, and wheat was firm for the trading session. And at the end of the day, we saw the March corn contract at $3.78¾, and December corn for this year also at $4.02¾ at the end of the trading day yesterday. Today is the third and final day of World Ag Expo in Tulare, California, and Max Armstrong will be making appearances at the Case IH display today at the National Farm Machinery Show in Louisville, Kentucky, so stop by and say hello to him. And I would guess staff members at the Environmental Protection Agency had a sleepless overnight because they have been told that President Trump is preparing a handful of executive orders related to the Environmental Protection Agency. Should be interesting to find out what those orders will concern. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You have a great day as well. A couple of other stories. While we have you on this morning on the opening bell, workers at a Boeing plant in South Carolina have rejected an effort to unionize. The National Labor Relations Board has released the results of the vote. Nearly 3,000 production workers were eligible to vote in the balloting. For weeks, both Boeing and the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers have been campaigning on this effort. The vote was it comes after 2 days, of President Trump scheduled to visit the Boeing plant for the rollout. He announced that, by the way, earlier this week for the rollout of the first Boeing 787-10 Dreamliner. Again, the machinists there have voted not to unionize at the plant there operated by Chicago-based Boeing Corporation. Yahoo is warning users again of potentially malicious activity on their accounts that happened between 2015 and 2016. It is the latest development in the internet company's investigation of a mega breach that exposed about 1 billion users several years ago. It's not clear how many have been affected in this latest round, which involved the use of forged cookies, strings of data that are used to allow people to access online accounts without re-entering their passwords. Yahoo says that its investigation has identified user accounts for which it believes those forged cookies were taken or used. Yahoo's in the process of notifying all of those potentially affected account holders. Company declined to say how many, again, affected and whether or not this might impact their ongoing deal to be purchased. Also today, we're watching another story out of Washington that has to do more with toys than anything else. It's out of New York, actually. You probably saw this yesterday. For the first time in more than 30 years, American Girl will sell a boy version of its pricey dolls, the 18-inch Logan Everett doll. Logan Everett will be its name. Goes on sale this week. American Girl is owned by Barbie maker Mattel Incorporated. It says Logan is a drummer and will come with a doll-sized drum kit. Now, the Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for this Thursday, February 16th, 2017. The Commerce Department reports on U.S. home construction in January. The Labor Department will report on the number of people who applied for unemployment benefits last week. Freddie Mac also reports on this week's average U.S. mortgage rates. It'll issue quarterly results before opening on Wall Street this morning. Also today, the G20 foreign ministers will meet in Bonn. The meeting is part of German G20 presidency hosted by the newly sworn in German foreign minister. Secretary of State Tillerson may attend. Also today, the North Atlantic Council has meetings that are concluding. The high-level defense ministers of those countries, chaired by the NATO Secretary General, will be at the meeting. It's expected to focus on the alliance's strained relations with Russia and cooperation with the EU and Middle East nations battling extremists. Some of the things that could move the markets on this Thursday, February 16th.